Hello. Today's January 16th, and it's another Level 1 News Day.
But what news are we covering?
I instantly forgot. I just know that next time, though, it's going to be business and nonsense, and that's going to be weird.
No.
It's not business? No. Wait, what is it?
We covered business yesterday.
We did.
It was only business.
But it was something weird, though.
Government.
Government.
It's government. Government is the outlier this week. So, oddly enough, it's going to be robot and security today. Two things that too often don't go together.
Yeah, government and nonsense is going to be a very... Because, like, government's going to be serious, then we're just going to go launch straight into insanity.
Well, is government ever really serious? Well, it's serious in the way that it can destroy our lives.
But yeah.
Nonsense in terms of what they actually do. Well, in the robot world, it is... I'm surprised it took them this long to figure out to do this, because it seems like an obvious one. But Amazon is bringing in a new fleet of robots.
We got self-driving cars. Now we got self-driving forklifts. Yeah, TechSpot has the article. Amazon could do away with human forklift drivers. So that is going to be a lot of Amazon warehouse employees gone.
That forklift certification is now useless.
Oh.
Don't you feel silly?
There's going to be a lot of forklift operators in our comments that are like, you don't understand.
Well, I'm sure. You know, so somebody takes a forklift arm up the ass a couple of times. That's progress.
That's the price of doing business.
You weren't in the green zone. That was your fault.
Now, we have talked about butt robots before, and it's not what you think, you filthy animals. It's a robot that's made to test things like jeans and phones. It turns out the car companies have them, too.
Yep. This is from The Verge. Ford's robot butt for testing car seats can now sweat.
Booby sweat.
So, yeah. Look, it's a robot butt that tests car seats to make sure they'll last at least 5 years.
How sweaty of a butt do you think that is?
It's going to sweat 1 liter.
Rate in the comments, chat.
And, so this guy just pounds into these seats thousands of times to simulate, you know, you getting in out of your car over time. And now it'll do it dripping with simulated sweat.
I like to imagine it it malfunctions and it just like starts really banging on there, like twerking on the seat, covered in sweat.
It goes into booty clap mode.
Oh.
Well, maybe one of the most bizarre stories that's ever come to the robot section.
From CES?
It comes from CES. And it's just like this unassuming robot just minding his own business.
An autonomous robot was hit by a Tesla vehicle that was also in autonomous mode. But this is weird because there was no police report or any other details. So there was this company that was making this autonomous advertising robot. And it was like driving around CES and...
Then Promobot is what it's called.
It wandered into the road. It was not supposed to be in the road, and it was hit by a Tesla Model 3.
So they had more than one of these robots, and they made it sound like they rounded them all up, and they were like, okay, robots, let's all go to the trade floor, and they followed them like little baby ducklings, except one got lost. And this no one noticed.
This sounds like the movie Short Circuit, where like one of the military robots was hit by lightning and wanders off and no one notices.
So they are, of course, Wired has looked into this, and they're saying there's no police report, no report from the private security at the venue. Nobody has seen it. They also said there was a suspicious-looking rope laying on the ground near the robot that could have been used to pull it away at the last second and topple it over. And they can't find the guy who's driving the car.
There was a quote from the guy that was driving the car or something that was like, oh, I just barely bumped it.
But that was from the press release from Promobot. Yeah.
But then the CEO of Promobot or the guy, the commentator from Promobot was like, well, we were going to try to do this at CES, but now it's not going to work. So one wonders if they had some sort of catastrophic technology failure and we're like, we're going to blame it on the robot wandering into traffic.
They would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for those pesky kids.
They also point out that the Tesla autopilot or whatever they call it is not for a situation like that. You would not autopilot through a busy tech
conference
venue. That would be stupid. And the guy's statement was, I just got this Tesla and I figured I'd test it out. Why not test it out at CES? And it's like, none of this makes any sense at all.
The picture is even bizarre.
Like the photo, it looks like something from like a Bigfoot sighting.
How could this happen?
Well, the next headline seems horrific.
Also, how could this happen?
But when you read it, it gets less horrific, but just more WTF, maybe?
Kind of sad.
Yeah. So ZDNet has... This is a follow-up from a story that we've covered a few times, but anonymous hacker gets 10 years in prison for DDoS attacks on children's hospitals. After a house search, a hacker tried to flee to Cuba in a boat, but needed help, and then he was rescued by a Disney cruise ship. And this comes from, like, 2014. And that, as far as I can tell, they didn't even charge him with, like, trying to escape or anything like that. But the DDoS attacks were like the low orbit ion cannon thing, I think, from Anonymous. And this the children's hospital story is also really convoluted.
Yeah, it's about a girl being separated from her family because of a diagnosis that was a misdiagnosis. And that's what caused these people to do this weird activism with DDoSing. And it's just a bizarre story all the way around. I think they finally fixed the diagnosis and the story had kind of a happy ending, except for this guy. But also imagine the peaks and valleys of this guy's final days.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't know anything was up, but then he found out, I guess, he was going to go to jail. So he fled in a boat, but he didn't pack enough food. So he's starving in a boat for a few days, and that's a valley.
That's a low valley.
He's thinking, well, the first valley is, I'm going to prison. Oh, but I can escape. Small peak. Oh, but I'm starving to death in a boat. Oh, but there's a Disney cruise. And imagine the opulence of a Disney cruise. That's a huge peak. And then actual prison valley. So
at least you guys go on a Disney cruise before you got picked up.
Yeah.
As a taxpayer, I don't think that the punishment fits the crime at all. Like, there was obviously no one who knew anything about technology on that jury.
Well, you think it was... I mean, should have gotten less?
Well, it wasn't just him that participated in the attack. It was a distributed denial of service attack.
I think he might have spearheaded organized it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I agree. I mean, taking a children's hospital down, though, is...
That's pretty shitty.
That's pretty stupid, no matter what you're trying to accomplish.
That's true.
I mean, how many children were affected?
Negatively, yeah. And that's a big deal.
So that's kind of like, two rights, 1,000 rights... Or 1,000 wrongs don't make a right?
Yeah. I think he learned his lesson, though, probably.
Well, maybe. Speaking of things that are not properly punished, I think these crimes should be death penalty. all day long, whether it results in a death or not.
Ars Technica has the article, Facebook executive swatting sends significant police response to his home. Armed police respond to a hoax that he shot his wife and tied up his kids and planted bombs. So this is a Facebook executive who was swatted, basically.
And of course, we all want to see Facebook executives suffer. But this is still wrong.
Swatting, yeah. it's a level of trauma that's hard to recover from.
Well, in America, we've got a paramilitarized police force. So there was not, like, there was double-digit percentage chances that the police were just going to randomly shoot people that were on site.
Like, I bet the only reason that he didn't get shot was that his address was in a really nice neighborhood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
And one would think that maybe the wealthy and the people in power would look at this and say, maybe this paramilitarized SWAT response is not what we should do in these types of scenarios. But instead, what's going to happen is there's going to be a list created, and you and me are not going to be on that list.
But they believe that paramilitarized police presence is what stands between them and the plebs.
Yeah.
I mean, look at France.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine what those cops are thinking in France. Because that's a blue-collar job. Why don't you just step aside? It shows the power of, like, you know...
The psychological aspect of that.
That people believe that it can't happen because they would never do that. They're good people. They took an oath. It'll happen.
Speaking of things that can't happen, Ars Technica has the next story.
Yeah, this is amazing. And it's amazing just the trouble they went through. But you got to think they're reaping large rewards here. This is a DNS attack that completely replaces a domain, probably with a slight misspelling. But using certificates and everything, you would never know it. So it's a phishing, but when you get phished, the experience is 99% perfect.
Seamless.
A DNS hijacking wave is targeting companies at an almost unprecedented scale. Clever trick allows attackers to obtain a valid TLS certificate for hijacked domains. So basically, they're using DNS. You could log into different service providers and not even realize that an attacker has been in the middle between you and the website that you were trying to get to. But the bad news is, because they're able to obtain an SSL certificate or a TLS certificate, they can steal your credentials in the middle. So you don't even necessarily know that anything has gone wrong.
Yeah, because it redirects you to the correct site.
Well, it sort of passes it through. But once you log in, you are taken back to where you belong.
Yeah.
They just now have your credentials.
Yeah.
So it's brilliant. Smooth. But it's terrible. Now, this story
Speaking of the opposite of brilliant.
This is, how could you not have known?
Well, he had a blue check mark on Facebook.
You know it's impossible.
You bring up a good point. The blue check mark. I mean,
it's a blue check.
This is probably the first time in recorded history that a blue check mark has been violated for personal gain.
Yes.
I don't think we've got a whole story here. So this is a follow-up to the story that we did on the GoFundMe Fund the Wall thing. So GoFundMe is refunding all the donations made to the Fund the Wall campaign. Who could have guessed? So Brian Kulfage, the veteran behind the GoFundMe campaign that was raising money for a wall along the U.S. southern border, reportedly grew a lucrative email list using shadowy techniques. Yeah. It's like, but the blue check.
And this was not the first time he's done this. It turns out he has run a lot of right-wing campaigns and websites. And actually, one of the sites that he'd worked with in the past has outed him, and I think produced text messages saying that, yes, I'm able to get people to submit /steal email addresses. And so he has 3.5 million email address list that is very lucrative because these are people who are well known to be conservative and willing to donate or purchase conservative related items.
Because they gave to the Build the Wall campaign.
Exactly. So he's making, he's not stealing the GoFundMe money as a lot of people might have suspected. It's better than that. He's found a way to monetize it on the side.
It's despicable, but it's kind of like, it's also sort of brilliant in a horrible sort of way.
But he does have the blue check mark.
It is extra despicable because he's using his, of course, you can't take away, he lost his arms and legs in a war. And I guess he's making lemonade, but he's making it with just a pinch of cyanide, I think. So, yeah.
Makes it taste better.
I think the better analogy is that he's selling people lemonade that has a little bit of urine in it.
Yeah, but I mean, how would you make money from it? I guess you would make extra money.
That's a topic from another time.
But, yeah, so bad news if you were hoping that the wall would be privately funded through GoFundMe. It's not going to happen.
No. Yeah. Fell a little bit short of its $5 billion funding goal.
He got to $15 million. $15 million, I think, yeah.
That seems about the limit of
the stupidity.
But all those rubes who donated that money got their email stolen, and they're going to be bombarded with right-wing propaganda. They'd probably love it.
Yeah, preaching to the choir. Matter.
Well, the Chinese, you know, they have data leaks just as often as we do, and this last one was pretty extreme.
200 million Chinese resumes leak in a huge database breach. So Chinese people have websites for finding jobs just like we do. 200 million resumes. This is bad for phishing and, you know, the whole fake identity things. Like, it's like, what street did you grow up on? I've got a resume.
What was your first job?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
The street you grew up on might not be on your resume, but maybe.
Well, you can.
Address history.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, maybe.
They point out that Chinese resumes are actually much more invasive here than they are here in the West. You put things like height and weight and sometimes blood type. And favorite flavor of Kool-Aid, stuff like that. So,
a lot by people's favorite flavor.
Identity theft is almost guaranteed for some of those 200 million people. Sorry.
Ouch.
Well, DuckDuckGo sort of prides itself as being the non-spying search engine. That's really the only reason to use it, right?
Well, it's also a competent search engine. It's surprisingly good.
Yeah, well, Google's good too.
Well, but Google has the, you know, side of,
yeah,
you know, Orwellian surveillance.
there's a bad part of it. But DuckDuckGo, I think without that, they would never compete. And that's why this was pretty upsetting to them.
Beta News has an article that says DuckDuckGo denies using fingerprinting to track its users. And so at issue here is a JavaScript API that DuckDuckGo has implemented for their search. And it looks to some researcher like DuckDuckGo is collecting a lot more information than they should on that JavaScript API. DuckDuckGo says it's to improve the user's search experience and that there's no personally identifiable information there. The researcher says that they get enough information that they could probably identify individual users. I looked at it. I'm more on the side of DuckDuckGo than the researcher, but there are some unanswered questions here.
They also they pulled a selection from the documentation of the thing, where it was like oh no, that was from DuckDuckGo.
Yeah,
yeah, but they talk about how, you know, fingerprinting techniques cause false positives, and they don't do that way. But they also didn't specifically say what they were using it for, which I think would have defended them much more.
Yeah. So. I think what kicked all this off was somebody's browser plugin was like, oh my gosh, the search engine is hitting a JavaScript API, which, you know, ad companies usually use that kind of a technique to do stuff.
Yeah, there's a Firefox plugin you can get that does flag DuckDuckGo as this thing. And they do admit to using that API. And they just say they're not using it for anything nefarious.
DuckDuckGo says that it's just a scorched earth approach. I think were their exact words that works that way. But, you know, that's a lot of the problem we have with our tabs. It's like when we leave a tab and come back to it and it's out of memory, it's like, what happened here? And it's like, well, there was JavaScript run amok in the background doing all kinds of crazy stuff.
DuckDuckGo, I haven't used it much, but I'm pretty sure it's just like Google, right? Big white page with a search box. So there's no reason.
We need to customize the user experience.
I mean, even on mobile, that's the same exact thing. So
I can imagine some scenarios because Google has been, you know, eerily prescient about some search results that I typed in that on their own would be completely ambiguous. But given the last 15 minutes search history, it knew the kind of content that I was looking for with those search terms. And so it did. I could gather that multiple searches in a row might give context and maybe they might use the API for that. Yeah,
but that's still against what DuckDuckGo stands for, I think.
It could be.
They're certainly not worth it, whatever it is. Well, we talked last week. Was it last week about the EU bug bounty?
The EU bug bounty.
The official bug bounty was pretty sweet. I think PuTTY was like $97,000, which sounds amazing, right? Until you look at the competitors.
Motherboard is saying, well, now you can get $1 million for hacking WhatsApp or iMessage. Now, these are hacks that result in a complete root of an iPhone. But if you can, you know, find a vulnerability in iMessage that results in being able to remote take over a phone or take over a phone through a malicious iMessage, well, you can get $1 million.
Now, with the EU bug bounty, that will go toward fixing the software. That is not the case here.
This is just you getting money.
This will go toward them using your exploit to go after a high-level target. So, well,
think about GrayKey. I mean, GrayKey's, you know, what, $10,000 a pop times tens of thousands of sales to law enforcement times, you know, the really high-end package to governments around the world. I mean, that's
a license to print money.
Yeah.
So this is actually small potatoes compared to that. But this is also a one-time hit. GrayKey has to keep working.
Yeah.
So this is to go after either, you know, some state enemy or a high-level criminal. You know, so maybe you stop a drug lord. Maybe you catch an ambassador's wife cheating on him. You know?
What's the over-under for like level one reporting on the news story where there was a security researcher who bought into one of these bug bounties and, you know, it was through like some company in Chicago and he did the thing and they paid the $1 million and then like 4 years later, the feds bust in, arrest the guy, and it turns out that he was working for like, you know, Putin and didn't even know it. And it's like, you sold the vulnerability to the Russians. And that hurts our national security. Like, that's going to happen. We're going to cover that story at some point.
Mm. Well, it's kind of like, you know, blaming the car manufacturer for the accident. Yeah. But I could see the state totally ignoring that parallel.
Yeah. It's like, you got to come to work for us, and we won't throw you in jail. But it's like, can I get paid? No.
No, that's not the way this works.
You did something that we're going to twist into a horrible mistake that you should have known better.
They'll use like, Aaron Schwartz prosecutor.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They just keep him in their pocket for when they need to do a tech related.
I was working for an American company. I didn't know.
Well, if you trade Ethereum Classic, real bad news for you.
Coinbase has suspended Ethereum Classic trading after double spend attacks. Attackers carried out 11 double spend attacks and stole nearly 85,000 ETC, which is worth about 460,000 US.
They updated that after the story. The number of attacks went like up to the 20s or even more. And it's over a million.
I think that this has happened in the past when Ethereum was much smaller. I bet they just roll it back.
I don't know. So what happened was bad actors got control of most of the mining network. So they were able to, like, these were real transactions. So if you did make a transaction, I think you're fine. But they were able to route those transactions to their own wallets instead because they were in control of the entire mining network. So
it's not good. That's maybe not good for Ethereum being, you know, the whole cryptocurrency ecosystem for, you know, capital.
Well, markets. I think the new Ethereum has some safeguards against that, right? That's why this is classic.
Yeah.
Well,
maybe dead now.
We talked about Windows 7 and the failed update, and just one in a long line of failed updates for Windows. And this maybe makes this sting a little bit worse because sometimes not getting a Windows update saves you from a lot of pain.
Windows 10 is going to grab 7 gigs of your storage, so big updates don't fail, according to ZDNet. The reserved storage is coming with the next Windows 10 version is another reason to avoid PCs with little storage. Now, this is, like, I don't think this is really a huge deal, but Microsoft has been selling Surfaces even up through now today with only 128 gigs of internal storage.
Well, they point out 32 gig notebooks that are out there for sale with Windows 10.
Oh, yeah, like the netbooks? I didn't even think about those.
So, I mean,
those that's terrible.
You get, what's the Windows 10 footprint now, like 10 or 15?
If your side-by-side configuration goes nuts, it'll be like 35 gigs.
So plus 7. Plus 35 plus 7 minus 32. That's something right there.
Yeah, I don't... The 32 gig is not... I think that, like, the Surface 3, not the Surface Pro 3, I think they've had a 64 gig version of that, if memory serves. But even at 128 gig, there's not enough room for... I mean, that's smaller than a NAT's ear.
What about all that 4K home footage that you're going to make with your...
all 12 seconds of it?
Your 1 terabyte SSD card. You can't even copy it over. You
should only afford the 1 terabyte SSD.
They have a micro SD slot. I think the biggest one you can get there is 512 gigs. But you could add user storage with that, the SD card. But because it's on a USB interface, it's actually really flaky. So, like, it'll disconnect and reconnect because Microsoft is...
Well, we've talked about deepfakes a lot. And deepfakes wasn't actually about the technology as much as making the technology super easy to use. And if you remember Modlishka, which was the horrible two-factor exploit that we talked about like a couple weeks ago, maybe, this is kind of the deepfakes of that. They have fully automated it.
This new tool automates phishing attacks that bypass two-factor. So trust and two-factor authentication has slowly been eroded in the last month by the release of Amnesty International report and Modlishka tool. So yeah, this is, it's like, if you're a malware author, it's never been easier. Just drop this into your project and you're good to go.
This is, you know, you fish them, but in the process of fishing them, you wait for that two factor and you grab that as well. And this makes it ridiculously easy, which means it will be used a lot. So you really, really have to be careful what you click on. Cannot stress that enough.
Yeah.
Well, if you remember, this was the systemd argument early 2018 or late 2017?
No, systemd has been... So, like, the idea with systemd is that startup scripts are not sophisticated enough to handle complex dependencies. And so you have two camps, the people that work in the enterprise that have, like, really ridiculously complicated setups, and they're like, man, we need systemd. And then you have the other camp of Unix is... layers and layers and layers of simplicity that create complex emergent behavior, and we must stick and ruthlessly fight for the brilliance of the simplicity. And systemd has had a number of architectural problems and a number of vulnerabilities, and there's no end for that in sight.
That was a lot of words, none of which had anything to do with my question. When was the controversy? I can't remember, but it was recently. There was the camps that were saying, we must never have systemd, and the other camps are like, you're being ridiculous, it's way better. And
give me the
so
D.
Those are the camps, but it's an ongoing feud,
and one of them has a great argument this week.
Yeah, so Linux systemd affected by memory corruption vulnerabilities, and there are no patches. So
look how
yeah.
tiny that headline is.
This it's not for Rick. People with normal
no, I can vision, I can read it, but like it's so small compared to everything.
So this has to do with journaling and overflowing memory. Because systemd journals everything, you can pack that journal full and overflow some memory, and that will actually give you access or let you pull data from the memory that you're not supposed to.
From the target system, yeah.
And some distributions have already dealt with some of these exploits, not all of them. Some of them, especially even enterprise ones, have done nothing.
Yeah.
And there doesn't seem to be really much of a plan to do it anytime soon.
Yeah, it's difficult to exploit, but it would...
Can be done over a network, though.
Yeah, especially if you've got remote logging. Just if you've got access to dump stuff into systemd's log, you're basically screwed.
Ouch. Well, last week we talked about two weather apps that you don't want anything to do with. There was the weather.com one, and then there was the Chinese one, which was much worse.
Much worse, yeah.
More bad news about the Chinese one.
Yeah, malware has been found pre-installed on some Alcatel smartphones. The malware is also available inside an official Alcatel app available through the Google Play Store. So this is pretty deep and pervasive. Now the question becomes, is Alcatel in on it, or is it one of their suppliers?
I think it might have just been like, you know, oh, look at all these fancy apps that are already on your phone.
Yeah.
Because weather app is obvious.
Yeah, right? I'd say weather is usually one of the first ones like that people either install or they already like put on their home screen.
But this one was especially bad because it would subscribe you to things.
Yeah. The idea with these apps was commercial exploitation as much as spying. So you can sell your data passively and it's like you don't know that you're being abused except for it's like, oh, there's all this stuff going on. But also just... I'm going to subscribe you for this service that's $1 or $2 a month. And it's like, what is this on my bill? How do they do this? And then you have to like call and cancel and deal with it. If you do that at a low enough volume, people don't even notice.
Alcatel, not a huge name.
Yeah.
Honestly, I didn't recognize it when I first read it.
Well, the another blast from the past was the NotPetya attack.
We talked about when Oreo, like the Oreo factory was shut down because of NotPetya.
Some of the biggest brands in the world got hit with ransomware, and they had to shut down their warehouses for some time. And that's big money. I mean, those warehouses, we're cranking out Oreos around the clock. It takes a lot of Oreos to satisfy demand.
People will pay a lot for an Oreo.
It's a hard job, but the U.S. is happy to do it.
And so, obviously, when that happens, you have insurance, right? Well, maybe you don't.
Mondelez sues insurer Zurich over 100 million cyber attack claims. So the U.S. food company that owns Oreo, Cadbury brands, etc., is suing its insurance company Zurich for refusing to pay out on a $100 million claim for damage caused by the NotPetya cyber attack. The insurance company is saying, look, this was a nation-state attack, and you're not insured against that, basically.
I think, ultimately, they blame North Korea for NotPetya, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Not only is it a government attack, but also it's not what they call physical damage to equipment.
Yeah.
Although, in most cases, I don't think they were able to recover most of the stuff.
Yeah, the data.
So we need to see their policy to really know what was covered and what wasn't.
Well, we're going to see a lot of it because there's going to be a court case because they are suing to try and get that money. Now, these days, you will get a separate insurance policy for cyber attacks. But NotPetya was one of the first big ones.
Yeah.
So that probably wasn't as much of a thing in those days.
A lot of those policies do, even the cyber attack policies specifically exclude actions by nation states. You have to be like, you know, just the run of the mill criminals or it's like if this is attributed to a nation state, it's your SOL.
This is like
it's wartime.
You get home insurance and then you find out it's not flood insurance.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's like this
insurance. Did you discover that recently?
Hmm?
Did you discover that recently?
I don't think mine does flood insurance, but I am pretty high, so I don't think.
Yeah. Yeah, he is.
Her too, apparently.
I think that's the first time you've jumped on the bandwagon. Well, there was some debate among ourselves here. We're not sure if this is a University of California in
like a satellite campus.
Hong Kong or somewhere in Asia.
Or if the news is just coming out of Hong Kong.
Or if they are here and doing an exchange program.
So the University of California in California? I don't know. There's a University of California of, you know, lots of other places, maybe of Hong Kong, tells students not to use WeChat or WhatsApp in China. And so there's growing tensions. There was the Chinese national that was arrested in Canada at the behest of the U.S. We're going to talk about another Chinese, or I guess a Polish national arrested in Poland. It's an executive. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But, so there's some things are happening with tension. And some Canadians were arrested in China for ambiguous reasons. So, the university's like, hey, students, just so you know,
Yeah,
it's probably not a bad thing to tell your students. I mean,
right. Just don't even bother because they are for sure monitoring those things. And anything they see that they don't like will get you in some trouble. Actually, usually we've covered government at this point because it's kind of weird that we have to wait till Friday. But
yeah,
the Twitter crackdown is getting crazy in China. I mean, it was already crazy, but it's getting, like, you know,
next level.
I
feel like somebody should let the Chinese authorities know that Twitter's kind of on its way out and no one cares.
Dude, you need to be cracking down on Instagram.
That is, like, that's where the younger kids use Instagram and Snapchat.
Well, CES, one of the big things that comes out of CES is the car manufacturers. They announce a lot of new stuff at CES. And one of the trends that we've seen this year is very disturbing. But if you think about it, we've already got several car companies, Tesla being the most notable, that are already doing this.
Move aside, backseat driver. New CES at Tech. New Tech CES monitors you inside the car. This is just, there's a camera in the car pointed at you, but a lot of cars already have this. Like the whole,
it's not just a camera.
Well, they want to sell the data.
But the software does a variety of things.
Yeah.
Like, it knows when you're wearing your seatbelt. It knows when you're not paying attention. It knows if you fall asleep.
It knows when you're awake.
It definitely knows when you're awake. It
knows when you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake.
Most cars already have that. They have, like, the you're falling asleep sensor, and they have the your eyes are not moving around, and, you know, you don't seem to be alert sensor, so this is not really news.
Well, I think the news is this is going to be in every car. Every company pretty much talked about this, and
every car has a satellite connection now.
Not just that, but they pointed out how happy they were going to be to sell driver data to other companies. So maybe you get an advertisement. It's like, hey, you want to buy some caffeine pills? Because you are sleepy.
How long until Ford brand car insurance? And they will only insure the people that never drive.
Well, yeah, I guess. How would they... They just immediately invalidate the policy when you step in the car.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, you did a thing. Your policy's canceled. Because that would be in your policy.
This like, would also be bad for, like, you know, someone borrowing your car.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Unrecognized driver. Policy canceled.
Right. Well, the another big thing about 2018 was the live cameras on your door. Remember, Amazon actually is now using them to police the world for porch pirates. Almost as like a crowdfunding spying operation. They are feeding facial recognition from people who walk up to your door. And of course, Ring.
Behavior recognition.
Ring is theirs. Nest is the Google one. And we know what Google's up to. So it's kind of crazy, but it gets even crazier.
Yeah, so Nest competitor Ring reportedly gave employees full access to customers' live camera feeds. And these camera feeds were being processed by computers. So what was going on in the picture was being classified by computers. Like the whole AI thing, like when, you know, the guy in China walks by and he doesn't have any pants on, and he's got the red square around him, and it's like, there's a 35-year-old male with no pants. Remember that demo? We looked at that demo here on the news. Ring has been doing that on your front door.
Not just your front door. Some people have these in their home, too.
Oh, wow.
Which makes it a little more weird.
A lot of randos have had access to that feed.
Well, they're not quite rando. They work at Ring. So all of the high-level executives and the dev teams and probably security teams and stuff like that needed nothing more than your email address to tap into your camera and search. And you could search by keywords like kissing or handgun. And the camera was like, oh, yes, I've seen several instances of handguns in this household. Let me show them to you.
And that's terrifying to think about.
You think naked was one of them?
I bet naked was one.
Well, see, again, this kind of data, like if we go back to our previous story on the car, the vehicle stuff, just that kind of software for the insurance company. And it's like, oh, you've had firearms in the vehicle like 4 times. We're going to cancel your policy.
So, yeah, they claim, yes, this is true, but it was never violated. No one ever did anything irresponsible.
Oh, this hyperbole.
And someone did point out, an ex-employee pointed out, I was like, yeah, if I got an email from a reporter, I knew in the back of my mind, all I had to do was take that email and punch it into the system.
Yeah, and that's scary.
Yeah. So
that's not horrifying at all.
All I had to do if I wanted to see his junk was like type naked in his email address.
We laugh about that, but that's really like actually a really
that
terrible thing.
That for sure has happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, well, Friday will be a crazy day, government and nonsense. Some of them would say, you know, that's redundant, right? But we do have a bunch of nonsense this week, too.
Neat.
As much business came out of CES, nonsense came as well.
It's amazing there's so much government news with the shutdown government.
Well, some of it's foreign.
Most of it. Well, I get a chunk of it. See you then.
Bye.